Hello and welcome to the Hansen Hour podcast, where we spend an hour or thereabouts deep diving into the band Hansen. I'm your host, Megan, and you can join in with me and a special guest each week as we talk about a range of Hansen-related topics. I'm so excited that you are here to join in on this, so grab a cuppa or a glass of red and settle in for an hour of fun. It's guaranteed to make you smile. Hello and welcome to Season 1, Episode 1 of The Hansen Hour. My guest this week is Katie, who runs Hansen Stage, which she started way back in 2004, which is 19 years ago. And when I was thinking about doing this podcast and who I would have on as some guests, Katie was actually one of the first people I thought to reach out to. She's a wealth of Hansen knowledge, and if you don't already know, runs one of the most comprehensive Hansen websites out there. She collates a range of data that really gives Hansen fans the advantage of looking up things like past set lists, shows the band's played and where, and a range of other helpful bits and pieces that are really instrumental for us fans. So, Katie, a massive welcome to you, and thank you too for all the work and dedication that you've put into your website. It's really, really helpful for us. So thank you.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Yay. So I'm going to start off just with some really simple, easy questions before we get into the nitty gritty. All right. So what is your favorite Hansen song?
That's a tough one. It changes, but for the most part, if you make me pick one, I would go with Lost Without Each Other.
Oh my gosh, I love that. That's good. It is a really tough question. Yeah. All right. What about your favorite Hansen memory?
This is tough to narrow down too. but there's been so many over 25 years or so, you know. But to try and link things to the song that we'll be discussing later, there's something about the opening notes to Thinking of You that always brings me back to listening to Middle of Nowhere for the first time. And even when I hear it live and hear those opening notes, it just takes me back, you know, to 1997 and just being so excited to have that album and be listening to it.
Yes, I completely agree with you. It's those notes. And I was watching, not to get too off topic, because I tend to do that, but I was watching Tulsa, Tokyo in the Middle of Nowhere the other day, just for a little bit of research. And I don't know how jogged your memory is of that, but there's a scene in Tulsa, Tokyo in the Middle of Nowhere where they use those notes to sort of put in a montage as they're going around the world, all the fans sort of screaming, everyone holding up their signs, things like that. And I was thinking the exact same, that just those notes are key at bringing you right back to that 97-98 era and popping the CD on. So I totally agree with you.
Yeah, they're kind of iconic.
Yes. for those that aren't really familiar with what you do and the website that you run, can you just give us a little bit of insight into that?
Yeah, I created and maintain the site hansenstage.com, which is an archive and database of all of Hansen's concerts from 1997 to present. In addition to having all the set lists on there, as many as I can track down, there's also pictures of ticket stubs, details on all their songs with lyrics, who's the lead singer, when they last played it, and all sorts of information.
It's really such a good website. I really recommend, if you haven't checked it out, to head over there. It's really addictive. So is it a process that you sort of do alone? Like, it seems like a bit of a labor of love as well. Has there been times where you feel like you've had to give it up, or you've sort of passed the buck onto someone else to help you out with hashing everything out? What's your sort of process there?
I do it alone, and it's definitely a labor of love. I actually have a friend who started a Nine Inch Nails tour history site way back, and I asked him about it, and he told me what languages and what database he used for it, which was nothing that I actually knew myself. So I actually went and taught myself everything that I could, and so everything that I put together for the site is completely self-taught. I am a software engineer as my day job, so it kind of is a natural hobby. You know, I work with code at work and then come home and keep it going. Sometimes it does take a while to put things together. Like I'll envision something in my head and I won't actually get it to that point until years later. But that's really the only time that I would want to stop. It's usually I'm frustrated with myself and not knowing how to code things. But somehow, in the end, I always seem to get there.
I love this. And actually, I've got a guest coming on in another couple of episodes who is doing a PhD on, and it's so interesting that you have brought this up, because it's about women in particular who have sort of honed this unique skill set or taught themselves different skill sets because of their love for a band. So, for example, people that have learnt coding or learnt how to run websites, or even myself, like learning how to put a podcast together, people that run the Etsy stores that have learnt, you know, t-shirt screen printing and all these sorts of skills that we've sort of created that wouldn't really exist had we not been interested in the band. Does that make sense? Like, yeah. I don't know if I'm saying it, you know, in a way that to sort of get it across, but it is really interesting that we can learn new skills based on a band. And there's a girl doing a PhD on that that's really interested in coming in and having a chat about how that sort of comes about. So I think that's incredible.
Yeah, I mean, I first started teaching myself HTML when I was 13 or 14 because I wanted to make a Hanson website. So
yeah, wow.
That got me into, you know, the engineering stuff. So I probably wouldn't have my career if it wasn't for Hanson.
Yes. It is so, so awesome. I love that. You mentioned that you were like doing engineering. Now you do know a little bit about software based on, you know, the skills that you've learned. But with your things like statistics and all those little things, how do you come up with that? Are you using a particular software program to put it all together?
No, there's no program. It's I just have to figure out how to manipulate the data that's in the database in different ways. And a lot of it kind of gets born out of some sort of quote-unquote necessity. Back during the Underneath tour days, I was manually keeping track of what songs from each album I had heard live, because I wanted to hopefully eventually hear each album song live at least once. So I ended up figuring out how to automate that, which was the first like real feature on the site, which was what Hanson songs have you heard live. And then during the tour this summer, the RGB tour, my friends and I were all wondering what songs we had heard, but just for this tour, since they were mixing up the set list so much. So when I ended up getting home from my run of shows, I figured out how to set it up so that you could see not all your songs, but just for that tour. And then recently I've been working on something to see what shows were played on what date, which was because I wanted to know if I had seen every show that they've played on my birthday, which I have. So that was just added to the site.
Yeah, it is really, really incredible. So are you sort of, you mentioned that you had, you know, gone to some shows with your friends and things like that. Are you sort of have a range of people that help you collect the set lists, or you know, how do you sort of gather all the information? Can people input it into your website or send you emails? What's your sort of go-to?
That's the tricky part, since I've been to a lot of shows, but I can't get to all of them. So usually when a tour is announced, I try and figure out what shows I'm going to, and then I have a few close friends that I know don't mind keeping track for me. So I'll talk to them, see what ones they're going to, and then figure out what kind of gaps I have that need to be filled in. So for the RGB tour, I set up a volunteer form, and I tried to find two people who are going to each show just in case, you know, one might have missed a song, their phone battery died, you know, whatever happens. And I was actually pretty impressed that I found someone for every show on the RGB tour, especially since it was so extensive and so many countries, so many different places. And so after the show, I just have them email me the set list, and then I have like a little form on the back end to stick them into the website. So, I mean, I do all the coding myself, but I definitely cannot get all the content myself. So I'm super grateful when people are willing to help me out.
Yes. Do you have any big gaps in any of your work then? Anything that sort of stands out as, I don't know, I feel sometimes I'm a little bit OCD in making sure my gaps are filled. So is there anything that's sort of really bothering you that you wish that you had more data for that you don't?
The toughest thing was, since I started in like 2004, 2005, and that was just with ticket stubs, getting the early 98, 2000 tour stuff has been a little bit difficult. Because not only do people not remember those shows anymore as well, the internet was so new that it's hard to find, you know, fan reviews, newspaper articles, and stuff like that that might have the set list in them. Like, they're not on the internet.
Yeah, of course, of course. Ah, that I can totally understand that. So this tour, the red, green, blue tour, sorry, the past, the most previous last one, you actually got to be reporter for one of those shows. I can't remember which show it was, but I absolutely loved listening to your interview. I thought it was so much fun, and that the band were surprised by some of the answers that came out. Yeah. So again, if you haven't listened to that, I recommend. Can you just remind everyone what city that was for?
It was the Winnipeg, Canada show.
Okay, perfect. And
that was a lot of fun. I'm really glad that that's a perk of Hansen.net to let fan members interview them, because it's just an amazing experience. And I had really wanted to quiz them for a while, because I was curious, like, do they have any idea which songs they haven't been playing as much as the rest? And I was pretty surprised that Taylor especially was really good at guessing.
Yes. Yes. I was surprised too. I thought that they would have some idea, but the amount of shows that they've played, just the sort of breadth of what they do, you would think that over time they would lose a little bit of memory, but it was really telling to me about just how passionate they really are, and how much sort of foot they do have in what they're doing. They knew like quite a bit. I was surprised too at how much they had sort of been able to piece it together, or think about it, or talk it through to come up with some of their responses. So I thought it was awesome.
Yeah. And I gave them a cheat sheet, actually. I gave them a list of the tracks for all the albums, because I wasn't sure if they'd remember that. But they did say, even if I didn't give them the list, they eventually would have remembered them all. But that probably would have been a much longer interview.
It was a really good interview. And what was that like? Like, it was that the first time that you'd had the opportunity to do anything like that with the band? You know, were you sort of feeling nervous? Did you do a lot of prep? What was the overall sort of experience like for you?
I was really nervous waiting to go inside, but once I sat down with them, I felt really comfortable. And I actually had been reporter once before, way back in 2004. So it was very different to do it now than it was back then. Back then, they didn't record them. I had to write notes as they were speaking, and they speak pretty fast. But yeah, once I sat down with them, I felt totally comfortable and wasn't nervous at all.
Well, do you remember what your 2004 interview sort of, because that was when you just started the website, right?
I don't even know if I had started it at that point. But that one wasn't, that was just like a bunch of weird questions. I remember asking them, and the Summer Olympics was going on at the time, and I remember I asked them what Olympic sport they would want to participate in.
Do you remember the answer?
Zach said he would want to do a winter sport, the biathlon.
Okay.
Because you ski and shoot things. And that's the only one I remember. I don't know what the other two said.
I love that. I'm really glad that they record them now. I think that's really cool. And I love hearing them back. It's another reason that I started the pod, because I don't know if you're like me or a lot of the listeners are like me too. I love to fill the gaps with listening to Hanson content. So, you know, I've burnt through all the podcasts they've been guests on, all the Hanson Time podcasts. And then when the reporters were coming out for all the tours, it was so nice to be able to sort of put my headphones on, go for a walk, do all that sort of stuff and fill that gap by listening to the reporter ones. And some of them are just so funny, and I think the information that you get out of them is awesome as well, like things that we just wouldn't know. So I think they're so valuable.
Yeah, I listen to them all as well, and I also find it pretty impressive that even when they get asked the same question, they don't always give the same answer.
Yes, I know. I find that too. I think they say, like, you would know because you've done it, but do they say that they prefer that you sort of have an understanding of what questions have already been asked before you go in? Or, like, how do they sort of get you to prep for your interview?
Yeah, I mean, it does mention to try and not repeat questions, but I mean, if the person who went in the day before me asked the same questions, like, that one isn't up to listen to yet. So I think they know they're going to get some repeats. And then there's some hot topics. Like, I know the set lists was a big hot topic on this tour that got brought up a lot.
Yeah. What was that? I can't remember that. Oh, no, you go.
wasn't a lot of content from the new album, even though it was called the RGB Tour.
Yeah, okay, that's right. And what was their sort of, they sort of, correct me if I'm wrong, do they sort of say, you know, oh, it's a balancing act.
Like, right.
We've got to, cater for the new fans, the old fans, and
right.
And that sort of thing.
You need, it's somebody's first show, it's somebody's 10th show, it could be somebody's 100th show. So to try and find that balance cannot be easy.
Yeah. What would you say, off your knowledge, and I am just throwing this at you, so it's totally okay. So just for fun, for everyone listening here, what's the apart from Mbop, what's the most played Hanson song to date?
Probably Where's the Love would be second.
Okay. and the least played, like, if I was to go to a show, what would be like a really rare thing to hear? Like, what do we not hear a lot of at shows?
Lucy.
Oh, really?
That one's low on the list. They actually threw a few of them into the set list at Back to the Island. It was Dying to Be Alive, Lucy, and there were a couple others. And then Running Man isn't that low, but they had never played it at Back to the Island before, and they ended up playing that one.
Oh, and what's the sort of I will just preface this with, I've never been to a Back to the Island. Well, number one, I live in Australia and it is an epic journey, but I mean, that doesn't stop anyone. But also, it's over my daughter's birthday. So my daughter's birthday is the 6th of Jan. And because it's a adults sort of only thing, I just can't bring myself yet. Maybe when she gets older, but I can't bring myself to be away for such a distance, right? So what's the vibe like at Back to the Island when they sort of launch into something that is a little bit rare? Do people sort of have an understanding that we're hearing something that is just, I mean, you would know, like, you, when you hear a song, you must sort of think, oh my god, like, this is number 29 on the list, or oh, this is like really rare to be hearing this, and it must, you know, be such an awesome thing to sort of experience. What's the sort of atmosphere like when something comes on that we don't hear a lot of?
Yeah, I mean, you're getting mostly members, you know, maybe a few husbands or boyfriends that don't necessarily
right.
know the deep cuts. But the members definitely know when a deep cut has been pulled out. And this year I actually I PM Zach on HansenNet and said, here's the song you've played the least from every album. And by the way, you haven't played Speechless or Running Man at Back to the Island. So I don't know, you know, do with this information what you will. They ended up playing 4 or 5 from what I had sent him.
Oh, wow.
He had never actually acknowledged that he got the PM.
No.
So I was like, did he see it and not say anything? So I ended up, I ran into him after the last show and said, you know, where did these songs come from? Did you see the PM I sent? And he said, no, I didn't, but we just tried to mix it up and, you know, play some stuff we hadn't played in a while. So that was really cool. And I think everyone there really appreciated how much they mixed up the set list and how much they kind of, not necessarily from the vault, but songs that they hadn't really played that much lately.
Yeah. Do you think some songs don't get played just because they're maybe a little bit trickier to play on stage? Like, do you think that there's some that just are just sort of no-goes because of, they just don't work live?
Yeah. I can't think of any specifically off the top of my head, but I know that's come up where someone was like, why haven't you played whatever? And they were like, oh, that one's, you know, kind of hard to put together on stage. So I definitely think that that's why some of them might be lesser played than others.
Yeah. All right. Well, you and I are going to unpack the first song from the Middle of Nowhere album. So when I started this podcast, it was sort of so cognitively fatiguing to figure out how I was going to run it. And I did want to sort of keep to some sort of order. So for those that don't know, I'm starting with Middle of Nowhere album. And I guess after the album, I might maybe move into the era of of Middle of Nowhere and sort of talk about those more epic performances like on Oprah or Saturday Night Live or things like that. Other little bits and pieces that have come up during that time, but I'm going to go album by album, and each guest I have on, we're going to be unpacking a song in order for my for the way my brain works from the album. So Middle of Nowhere, it was released in 96 7, right? And the producers were... So I think that it was the Dust Brothers did maybe only a few songs, but I think from memory at the time, Beastie Boys were sort of breaking as well, and they ended up sort of losing interest in producing Middle of Nowhere and ended up doing more work, I think, in line with what they wanted. They were working with the Beastie Boys and things like that. And then they bought in, I'm not sure if I'm going to pronounce it correctly, Stephen Laroney. Mm-hmm. Or something similar to finish it off. And when I was researching this album, I suppose it was interesting for me now as an adult, because I think as a kid you don't really look at the sort of footnotes with as much interest as you do now. You know, like I was probably more interested in the lyrics and the emotion and the feeling that came with it. Now I'm sort of really enjoying unpacking the ins and outs of each song. So I was really surprised to see how many musicians actually worked on it. I actually didn't know, and maybe I'll get, you know, whatever for this, but I didn't know that Mark Hudson had done a lot of work with them on that album. I thought he was sort of newer, so I hope I'm not like embarrassing myself by saying that, but I didn't realize. So it's been really fun learning a lot more about it. So we're going to look at Thinking of You, which is the first song off the Middle of Nowhere album. And I looked on your website and I saw that it's been played a total of 325 times live, which makes it the fourth most played song from the album. So do you think, because they obviously play it a lot live and they play it that often, do you think that this makes it like the fourth most popular song off the album? Do you think that they know that? Probably based on too what you and I were saying at the start, that those first sort of chords, they garner such a reaction from the audience. You would think that that's one of the reasons that they play it so often, I think.
Yeah, isolating just Middle of Nowhere, I was really surprised that it was fourth. off the top of my head, like, I would have thought Man from Milwaukee would have been more popular. And I think, you know, like I'd mentioned before, there was, you know, concern about the set list on the RGB tour. I think some would argue that they don't know what fans want to hear at shows. But like I had said, they're putting a show together for your new fan and your old fan and your super fan. So trying to put that set list together can't be easy, but they might know that, you know, Thinking of You is that iconic opening song and people are going to want to hear that.
Yeah. Just thinking about, you've just mentioned something that sort of made me start thinking. In terms of songs played, Middle of Nowhere, now I'm thinking about it, and you can confirm because you've got all the data. Middle of Nowhere seems to be really well played out in terms of live shows, would you say? Like, it's definitely an album.
Yeah,
which I never really thought about until just now.
I mean, it's been out the longest, so it's been on every tour, but then you have albums like The Walk that rarely get any major representation in a show.
Yeah, and then that sort of comes back full circle to that point of, in terms of set lists and stuff, it's like really still something that, you know, and this podcast is definitely a very positive podcast, but I do know that sometimes something that does bug fans is that sort of, the fans that have been around for as long as you and I have, that nostalgic stuff is great, and obviously we love hearing it, but there can be that tendency to bend a little bit more towards the people that come to the shows for that nostalgia versus the fans that are really looking to see a lot more of their work performed live, would you say? And I'm just sort of shooting this breeze as we go along, but as you're talking, I'm sort of thinking more and more about that.
Yeah, I think if you're at a show, it becomes clear who came from the middle of nowhere songs when Mbop starts and all the phones go up to record video.
yeah, it's really interesting. So with the, where I'm just looking at my list, because now I've gone off my topic. I was going to ask you about the band knowing what the most popular songs are or what the fans want to hear at shows, but we did sort of just cover that a little bit, saying like possibly not. So thinking of you, it was the band's, this is where it gets a little bit confusing. So here in Australia, it was released as the fifth single from Middle of Nowhere. And I was like, the other day, I was like, that's weird. I wonder what the film clip was like, because I don't remember a Thinking of You film clip. So we've got Mbop as the first single. We all know the film clip for that. We've got Where's the Love, which was also iconic. And then it was I Will Come to You, which is a funny little film clip. Then it was Weird, right? After that. Yeah. And then for us here in Australia and some other parts of the world, the fifth release was this song, Thinking of You. And the film clip, you might know, but it was just a live, I can't remember where it was from, but it was a live shot. Do you know what I mean? It was just a live.
It might have been from the Beacon show when they recorded Tulsa, Tokyo in the Middle of Nowhere.
Right. Yeah, actually, I think that you're right, Katie. I think that jogs the memory. I think that's what it was. But it did actually chart really well here in Australia. So it went, we got to number six, but it wasn't released in the US as a single. And I wanted to sort of pick your brain about why you think that was the case.
Yeah, here in the US, it was featured in commercials for Eggo waffles. They did some promotion with Eggos and Pop-Tarts. And if you sent in so many UPCs, you could get a t-shirt. But otherwise, it wasn't a single. And I think in the US, by the time they had released like three or four, people were kind of like, we're done with Middle of Nowhere. And they kind of wanted to know or move on to what was next, whether that be Hanson's next album or just moving on to new bands entirely.
Yeah, that's really interesting, because we don't have, and I think that the other really interesting thing about having these conversations between like an American and Australian, we don't have Eggos or Pop-Tarts here. So there could have been some sort of marketing issue happening there as well. And I think also I was looking up the statistics for where Weird charted in the States versus Australia. And you're exactly right. By then, by like that fourth release, it really was dropping off a little bit. So, but not in the places where that single was released. So I think it was like, I can't remember what other countries, like maybe Asia and Australia, like New Zealand, things like that, where it was still charting really well, that was released. But then I didn't know about the marketing that they'd use that song for the other products as well. So that could definitely be that point of difference, which is super interesting.
Yeah, and I don't think we got a CD single for Weird or anything after that.
Oh,
I know there was one for I Will Come to You, though, because it had the B-side of Cried. And that was a good deal.
Wasn't it? And wasn't that a good song? I love that one.
Yeah.
So, do you know what? Lyrically, this song really gets me because I can't. It's like a big cognitive jump for me to start off like sitting outside a picket fence. I can't. I love the music for this song. I love the rhythm of it. But when I start looking at the lyrics and I try and like come to some sort of conclusion, I can't piece it all together. It just sort of seems to jump around from bit to bit. What's your take on what this song is like actually about?
I'll tell you, this was the question that I struggled the most with.
Really?
I'm not one to read and analyze lyrics, really. Every now and then, Taylor will sing something, and I'm like, wait, that's the line? It's not even what I thought it was. So sitting down to look at these lyrics, I was just like, wait, what?
Right.
I think the picket fence is that, you know, that perfect family. You have your house and your two kids and your white picket fence. And I think the first verse is kind of pining for someone that they want that perfect life and that perfect relationship with. But then I don't know where this heavy load comes from.
Right. I'm doing the exact same thing. When I lyrically look at it, I can make sense of like the individual sort of paragraphs of it. I can make sense of the chorus, but I can't link it together. And I'll be honest, once I started like really deep diving into this song, I was like, what is actually, it's a song that I sing along to. I'm like doing the whole jump up and down. I have a little scream when it comes on. And now I'm like looking at it from a really different perspective. I can't make sense of it. I'm like, hang on, what is actually even going on here? So I'm so glad, because we hadn't pre-discussed this. I'm so glad that you are in that same sort of boat.
We came to the same conclusion of confusion.
I not being able to sort of have, it doesn't seem to run, it's stoppy and starty, like lyrically at least.
Yeah.
All right. So the other thing that I found out about this, and I don't know if you've got any intel, so there's a middle of, when I was researching it, it said that Thinking of You was a middle of nowhere version, but they also had a three car garage version. So have you heard both of these alleged versions, or was there both two different versions of this song that you know of?
They had released their independent album Mbop before they got signed, and there are two Mbops on it. Thinking of You's on it. I think With You in Your Dreams might be on it. So they had recorded those independently themselves, and then I guess the record label decided they liked some of them and wanted to rework them with professionals, I guess, or their producers. So there are two different versions technically, but yes. I don't know if there's a difference enough to call it two different songs. Like for Hanson's stage, it's one, there's Thinking of You. The same for Mbop, although they did, I think it's a little bit slower, the original version. And they did once say they specifically were performing it in that way live. But I mean, all their songs kind of evolve with the record label behind it, and then as they play it live through the years. So, like, Thinking of You turned into the Mario Underground theme on this past tour. So, yeah, so for me, there's one song, but it could have different versions.
Yes, yeah, I hear that. And I think I had sort of, I spent way too much time one night trying to find the two different versions. I don't have like a CD player, and actually I don't have like any of the CDs really left anymore anyway. So I spent a lot of time on the internet trying to hunt down what the two versions were and to give them a listen so I could find a point of difference. But I couldn't find the 3CG version.
Yeah, so that one's really hard to find. It's not streaming or anything anymore. So yeah, I haven't listened to that in years, so I don't remember offhand how different they were.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much, Katie. This has been so, so interesting. And yeah, just again, thank you so much for your contribution and everything that you do and all the work that you put into it. I know I really appreciated it, and I know I probably speak for a lot of other fans as well. So thank you so much. Have you got anything new coming up on the website, any new features or anything new happening that you wanted to talk about? And make sure you let people know where they can find you as well.
Yeah, well, like I had mentioned earlier, the newest feature is you can search shows by a specific date. So if you want to see what shows were on your birthday or your anniversary or your kid's birthday or Hanson's birthday, that's new. And lately, I have been working on a new feature that I'm hoping to come out for Hanson Day. The set lists now list what other users have been to the shows. I'm hoping to make those links that will show you the users' list of shows and what songs they've heard or some variation of that, so that there's like a profile that you can check out other users to see what shows you might have gone to together, or for users to share their links with others to say, hey, here's all the times that I've seen Hanson. So I'm working on that. I'm hoping to have it done for Hanson Day or sometime in May, and that can be found at hansonstage.com.
That is an incredible idea, and I know for me, sometimes, you know, people will say to me, oh, like, how many Hanson shows have you been to? And I honestly couldn't tell you. So I think if you had that, because you just, like, you lose track, right? And I think if you had that place where you could start to log it, then that would be really, really handy.
Yeah, so right now you can log in and you can see your list, but there's no way to share that with the public if you're so inclined. So hopefully that'll be coming soon.
That's such a good idea. Well, thank you so much. Well, that is all for season one, episode one of the Hanson Hour. Thank you so much to Katie for joining me. I'm more than happy to hear from anyone else that feels like they might be a good fit to be on the pod, to jump in and, you know, pull apart some songs and have a chat about their nostalgia or their memories or anything that they're doing in the Hanson world. So you can just send me a message on Instagram, which is the Hanson Hour, and you can find Katie on all her social medias at Hanson Stage, or check out her website at www.hansonstage.com. See you next week.